Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
We made it. Congratulations. We're here on Friday, the end of the work week. If you can get through today, maybe some of you only half day today. My wife works 9-hour days all week so that she can get half day off on Friday. That's pretty groovy. So, and I'm going to take off. You know, it's funny when I tell people I get off on at about 2 o'clock every day or so. They're like, oh, you're so lucky. I wish I could work. Get off that earth. I come in at 5, folks. So, you know, your choice is, obviously all jobs can't do what I do, but I'm still working 9 hours, sometimes 10 or 11. Man, I can't remember what day it was, Wednesday or Thursday last week. I was here from 5 a.m. to 4 p.m., 11 hours, and I still had stuff I needed to do. And so, yeah, I was, I'm not bragging, I'm complaining. I'm not complaining, I'm just stating a fact. I'm okay, I'm doing all of the above. But welcome, everybody. I'm Andy Griffin. This is the Andy Griffin Show. Mello Finlinson is over there, or Melody Finlinson. Hi, Melody.
Hello.
Now, when you were in, say, fourth grade, did you try to get them to call you Mello, or were you Melody back then?
I was Melody until second grade, and in third grade, we had to write our name in cursive.
Oh.
And Melody was very long to write so many times, so I shortened it to Mello.
Oh.
So I came home and said, hey, my name's Mello, and my mom's like, what do you mean your name's Mello? I'm like, yeah, my name's Mello. And ever since then, I've just been Mello.
So it was born from laziness? You didn't want to write D?
The efficient living aspect of my life.
Efficient. That's a fancy way of saying lazy. Yeah, right.
Work smarter, not harder, Andy. That's my motto.
I've told this story before. I don't relish this story. In fact, it's a slightly painful memory of mine. But in third grade, I'll never forget it. In third grade, we had a substitute teacher come in. And you know how they used to call roll? They'd call out everybody's name, and you hear, you know, I don't know if they do that anymore, but they would call roll. And the substitute teacher got to my name, and because it was written in cursive, if you take the letter A and you don't close the A all the way, it looks like a C-I instead of an A.
Mm.
And the substitute teacher said, Cindy Griffin.
Oh, no.
Now, if that had happened in, you know, senior year or something, your friends would rag you, but it would go away really quickly. But when you're in third grade and the substitute teacher calls you Cindy, that sticks for a while.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I didn't say anything at first. I knew what had happened. I mean, right away I realized what was going on. But Cindy, where's Cindy? Is Cindy here? Anybody know Cindy? Who's Cindy? Where's Cindy? And finally, I raised my arm and I said, I think that's an A. It's Andy, not Cindy. And she, you know, oh, I'm sorry about that. Yeah, Andy. Okay, thank you. And she went on. But, oh, my life for the next few weeks in third grade.
That's scarring.
Every one of my buddies and every one of my non-buddies all called me Cindy for a while. And as you can imagine, as a third grader, a tall, somewhat awkward, shy third grader named Andy, did not enjoy that.
No, that would not be fun. No, but there's lots of things that rhyme with mellow.
Yeah.
So I put up with a lot, but it doesn't razz me. I'm good. You can call me whatever.
Jello.
Yellow, mellow, yellow.
Yeah.
Pillow. Yeah. Hello. Lots of things.
Oh man, isn't bullying fun? That's what they call it nowadays. We just called it, you know, whatever.
Teasing,
I was always the tallest, and so I acquired nicknames like Jolly Green Giant or Lurch or whatever. That was never that fun, and I was really sensitive to some of those. And then as you get older, you realize, big deal, who cares, right?
No biggie. But when you're little, it is your whole world.
And then I had the dual thing going where my name with being Andy Griffin, there was back then Andy Griffith's show was very popular. And so people would call me Barney or Aunt B or Opie or Goober or whatever. And that bothered me for a while. And then later on, probably about the time I hit high school, I realized the Andy Griffith show, he's a really good guy.
Yeah.
And I could have much worse names. My name could have been Gary Gilmore or Jeffrey Dahmer or, you know, one of the really bad, infamous people from history. At least my first name wasn't Adolf, right?
Right. Much better.
So, okay, I'm going to, for just a minute, if you would tell us about your experience of going to the Family History Center. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I have been going through all of my pictures and trying to get things sorted.
Trying to get organized, yep. Yes. And in fact, you have how many followers now?
25,000,
25,000 followers.
22, I might lie. 22,000.
This is on Insta?
Instagram, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So I'm just organizing my whole life. And as I was going through my garage, I found two or three totes worth of pictures. I'm a mom of the 90s.
And for those of us who are not...
bins.
Yeah,
containers.
Bins. Big,
storage
large
containers.
Bins of pictures of your life.
Of my whole life, of my kids. And we took a lot of pictures. So I went through the pictures and I organized them by size. And then I had them, I have this little plastic container that like sorts the pictures. You can stack them vertically so you can see everything. And then I had a couple of old like photo boxes and they were organized.
Okay.
So I took those into the Family Search Center down here in St. George, located near the LDS Temple there. And I made an appointment from 9 to noon to use their scanner. They have a fast photo scanner.
Okay.
So I brought my own thumb drive.
And your dad.
And my dad came to help me. He actually volunteers there, okay. Actually once a week. So I had him help me. And I took all the photos and we started scanning them. And then it loads it up into this program and then you save it onto your thumb drive. So I was able to sort the photos as I scanned them. So I had like pictures from the 90s, pictures from my childhood, pictures from the early 2000s. And if it was each kid, then I just sorted it by each of the kids.
Wow.
And so I did all that. We got through 2,000 pictures.
2,000?
2,000 wow. In 3.5 hours. And they also have a flatbed scanner, so I was able to scan the Polaroid images too. And you can actually just take one photo and like zoom in on it. So I had like one big picture with just like a little tiny thumbprint picture, and it was able to get just that image and kind of blow it up a little bit. So I just had that one image. So got all those downloaded.
Cool.
And then once they were on my thumb drive, I went back home to my office, and then I was able to upload those to my Google Photos. And then share those albums. So now all of my kids have access to all the pictures and they're not just in a tote in my garage.
That is really cool.
Feels
now,
so good.
Now, what do you do with the old ones? Are you confident enough in what happened to get rid of the old ones?
So that's a very good question. My dad, yes, he has tossed all his. He actually uploaded his to his family tree.
Okay.
And labeled each person, which is great because you get pictures and you're like, who is this? So he's actually gone a step further. My plan is to pass it along. So I'm going to get an envelope for each of the kids. And then, like, so these are your pictures. These are you. This is you. And this is you. And this is you. Because that's what my mom did. She, like, gave us our own pictures.
Hmm.
And then I won't feel bad like I'm throwing them away.
Okay. So you're offloading them to someone else, though.
I am, but they are digitally preserved, so I'm feeling better about my choices.
We went through a few years ago. My wife, bless her heart, she did all the legwork on this, and she scanned all our old photos from when she was a kid, from when I was a kid, you know, and sorted and organized them. We could not, though. We were not brave enough to throw them out or even give them away. But we did. We dismantled because we had, gosh, we must have had a dozen scrapbooks with pictures. And I mean, that was the thing. You take pictures, you put them in the scrapbook, and, mm-hmm. Alongside things that they had in common. You know, maybe it was a certain time of year or a certain year or whatever. And so they're all out of the scrapbooks now, and they're all in one box, basically 12 scrapbooks worth. So we haven't quite mellowized them yet. They're not that organized, but they're a lot smaller, a lot more compact than they were.
Yeah, I did deconstruct a couple of the photo books, but my problem with that was like the tape use on the back. Some of them were sticky,
mm-hmm.
and then they were sticking going through the scanner, so I would need to go over to the flatbed scanner for that.
Yeah.
But the Family Search Center also has, there's like a recording booth there, and you can go in and like record your memories or record your history and then preserve that for your kids. And they do also, I haven't used this yet, they do have a way to transfer old data like VHSs and other types of recordings. I haven't done that. I usually just send mine out for that because that's
there is a business that's making a lot of money, and it's called Legacy Box. I know they advertise it on Sean Hannity. I think Clay and Buck advertise it as well, but and if you want to go that way, it's not real cheap, but it's not super expensive either. But that's a way. I know we have a box full of old, what is it, 8 VHS 8 8mm, whatever.
Yeah.
That I need to do something with. And someday, it was one of those, someday I'll do that.
Yeah, there's a place in town where you can take it. I've taken my VHS. Okay. It's over on Sunset. I think it's called Legacy Media. And I've dropped off my VHS tapes, and they put them on a CD and a little flash drive for you. And then I uploaded those and let the kids have those too. I've still got probably like 12 more to do, but it was a little pricey. I think for five, it cost me like $300, I think. So, but they have coupons every now and then where you can get like 20 or 30% off.
In today's day and age, and this is a good thing for modern times, you take a picture, it's right there, it's electronic, and it's right there for you. Do you remember, though, the feeling when you would take a roll of pictures and then you would drop them off at the photo mat or the pharmacy or whoever was developing them, and then you had like a 2 or 3 day wait to see how they turned out? Remember that feeling?
Okay, so I actually just did this.
Yeah.
So I found in my closet when I was organizing, I found a box of like the throwaway cameras, you know, that you...
Oh, yeah, yeah, the disposables.
Yeah, we had those on our tables at our wedding.
Really?
8 years ago for everybody just to take pictures.
And you still have?
I found them, and so I went to drop them off. Okay, I am never using disposable cameras. It cost me over $300. I hope my husband's not listening. To get those all developed. And little kids taking pictures do not take the best pictures. So there are a lot of throwaway pictures, but it was really crazy to see like all my nieces and nephews that were like 2 and now they're like 10. You know what I mean? It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And some candid pictures I haven't seen. So it was fun, but
there's a King of Queens sitcom episode about those disposable cameras in a wedding. And I'm not going to necessarily recommend the episode because it ends up being a little bit PG-13.
But, oh, okay.
Yeah. So, by the way, it is Cotton Days weekend this weekend. Now, they hadn't planned on, you know, weather and rain and stuff like that, but I think we're going to get a little rain. I think it's going to clear up by this evening, and tomorrow should be a fantastic day for the Cotton Days festivities. They've got all kinds of stuff, movie in the park tonight, and they're revealing the Eric Dowdle puzzle. Are you familiar with this whole Eric Dowdle thing?
Yeah, we had one in Santa Clara,
and I bought it and put it
together, and it was so fun.
Yeah.
I loved it.
All the cool. Yeah. I'm guessing it had the Glockenspiel on it.
Yes, Glockenspiel.
Yes.
I love the Glockenspiel. I forgot that's what it was called, though.
Very, very cool. So Washington City is unveiling their own Eric Dowdle Washington City puzzle tonight.
Nice.
At the old gym there, right there on Main Street in Washington City. But that should be cool. It's weird because, of course, my wife works for Washington City, so we still feel connected. We lived in Washington City for 19 years, but we don't live there now. So it's kind of a weird deal. I'm not a Washingtonian, but I was for a long time. I have all, you know, I think we knew, of course, this was back then, and we haven't lived there for 5 years now. I felt like we knew 90% of the people that lived in the city, you
nice.
Know, and it's growing like crazy, and we didn't really know that many, but, you know, 90%, but we knew a lot of people there, and so I kind of still feel a special kinship to Washington City, even though I don't actually live there at the moment. So anyway, Cotton Days this weekend, it's kind of the old school celebration. They're going to have, what do they call it? Gunny sack or potato sack races and booths and all kinds of stuff. And the weather this time of year, I mean, you can go and they do have a celebration on the 24th, but man, it's like 110 degrees and, you know, the most valuable thing at the festival there on the 24th is shade. here you can actually go and participate in, you know, the food trucks and everything. Just be a part of things. It's going to be a lot of fun at Cotton Days. And of course, the celebration of a birthday there. And they are having a tractor pull. Do you know what a tractor pull is?
I haven't been, but Rob Roland, has a lot of trophies at his rock yard of those pulls.
Rolling Stone.
And he let me drive his tractor. So I think I can.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I love tractors. But so, I haven't done a tractor pull.
So the idea is they have this, they call it a weighted sled, which it doesn't really explain what it is, but it's a sled and it makes it so that the torque is heavier on the tractor the farther you go. And the idea of, see, how far can the tractor pull a weight based on the torque and the, you know, and everything. And it's kind of fascinating. It's different. It's not like the old mud bog races, you know. This is, you do it, you know, usually it's on dirt, and you just see how far your tractor can pull this weight, and the further you go, the heavier it gets. Obviously,
oh,
it wants
I see.
To. Yeah,
I see. Wants so to. How many feet is the space?
I don't know how long that. I'm guessing in the hundreds of feet.
But okay.
Yeah. No, nobody survives it by. You know, there's no victory over the sled. Eventually, it will stop you.
Okay.
But the idea is to see how far you can go.
I'm going to check that out this year.
Attractive. Well, there's also a parade tomorrow. I think it's 9 o'clock before the parade. They're having a lion's breakfast, you know, the pancakes and eggs and all that stuff. And then the festival all day long at Veterans Park. And I think they have a car show at Nyssen Park as well, which is the water wheel park over there.
Awesome.
In Washington City. So I'm going to be out of town. We're headed up north. It's the twins' birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
So, yes, the younger, I remember my son has two sets of twins. The older is in June, the younger is in April.
And how old are they going to be?
They're going to be one-year-olds.
Yeah. Awesome.
So, we're going to go there for that. We're also having a family chili cook-off, I guess. It's not really a competition, but we're all going to bring our own chilies.
But you're going to win.
Later that evening. Well, I was told, in no uncertain terms, by certain family members, Dad, not too hot, Dad. Because I have a tendency, I ordered, years ago, a ghost powder. And I like to put that in my chili, and it gives it, it still has a great flavor, but it gives it that kick. And like I said, I've been told, no ghost chili, Dad.
That's ghost a little powder, hot.
So I guess I will keep it toned down a little bit. So, all right, one of the things we talk about, Mello, all the time on this show is the harm that cell phones do. And I know a lot of us, myself, you included, use our cell phones as part of our jobs. Mm-hmm. It's what we do. Without our phones, you know, doing our job would be much more difficult. Now, they did it before, you know, smartphones came along. We could do it. But even like in the realtor business, like you had beepers and pagers and all kind, you know, back flip phone days, you were receiving notifications and stuff like that. So, it's been a part of the business world for about 3 decades or more now, right? But there have been study after study after study shown that when we let the cell phones take over our lives, it is detrimental to our relationships, to our mental well-being, to our children, to our grandchildren. So I thought maybe we'd spend 5 minutes, and we have 5 minutes to weather, so 5 minutes talking about ways we can maybe stop spending so much time on our cell phones.
Mm. All right? Okay, I'm ready.
Okay. Number one is spend more time outside.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are you any good at spending time outside, Mel?
I love to spend some time outside. I actually went out two nights ago and laid on our trampoline and just like looked up at the stars.
Nice. Did you see the meteor shower? The Lyra's meteor shower was this week.
No, I didn't. I saw the full moon,
stars?
Though.
There was full moon, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think Tuesday night was the peak of the meteor shower, and it still was going on Wednesday and Thursday, but it was lesser. Mm. And then the full moon this week, the pink moon, they called it.
It was beautiful.
So. Make an effort to spend more time outside. Number two, exercise. Now, it says another healthy habit to help you curb your cell phone use is exercise. Not too many people can use their phone while they're exercising. Now, I used to go to the gym, and I would get on one of those stationary bikes, and then I would play a show. Mm-hmm. I would watch a sitcom, or I would watch, you know, I like to watch the 2020 Mysteries, you know, and stuff like that. I would watch those on my phone. So I wasn't completely off my phone. But it was more like it was a TV at that point. I was watching a show. But even if you do that, it's a little bit better than always staring at your phone and getting on social media, whatever. So
exactly.
Exercise more. Number three, spend time with friends and family. Oh man, it drives me nuts when I see people sitting at a table, loved ones, people that care about each other sitting at a table. In a restaurant or wherever, and they're all looking down at their phones.
Okay, so I saw a restaurant. I heard the story. There's a restaurant in France, and they are offering people a free bottle of wine if they will check their phones in when they come to sit down.
Nice.
So then you enjoy the meal, and you get a free bottle of wine.
I saw this idea on the internet about that. I haven't tried it yet, but when you sit down in a restaurant, you all put your phones in a pile, just kind of at the head of the table. Mm-hmm. And the first person to touch their phone has to pay for dinner for everyone.
Ooh, I like it.
And raise the stakes a little bit, right?
Yeah.
The problem is if I go out with my kids, it's, yeah, you're paying anyway, Dad, so it doesn't really matter. So, yeah. Number four, put your phone in another room. Now, think about that. Do we suffer from separation anxiety from our phones sometimes? Mm-hmm. Especially those of us that use them for work. And it's, say, 3 in the afternoon, and maybe you even hear it buzz or ding in the other room. You're like, I gotta go check. See if you can break that habit. Put it in the other room so maybe you won't hear it buzz or ding, right?
Yeah, I do put my phone in the other room for sleep.
Good for you. I have been fortunate in that. So when I first started this job, it shifted my lifestyle. Remember, as a sports writer and sports broadcaster, my life before I took this job was generally a late at night life. Mm-hmm. I mean, games happen at night. I was up till 2 or 3 in the morning writing stories, putting together web pages or whatever with whatever happened in sports that night. And so I went from really a night owl, a 2 a.m., 3 a.m. guy to a early bird where I had to be to work at 5 a.m. So I had to go to bed. If I wanted to get 7 hours of sleep, I'm in bed. I have to be in bed by 9:30 or so. And the first year or two of that, I still had all my friends, all the people that I knew, all my acquaintances, people that needed to talk to me. I was getting texts and calls at 10 and 11, 12 mm-hmm. at night. And I think finally now I've been at this job over 5 years. I think I finally got them trained at, look, if you want to talk to me, you're going to have to either send something early or you're going to have to know that I'm not going to respond. You will get no response from me until the next morning.
Exactly.
I get my revenge. If someone texts me at midnight or 1, I usually text them back at 5.
I do like to do that as well. I know. It's kind of
serves them right.
It's a little petty, but it's good.
Mute your notifications. How many of us have a phone we've carried around and... Okay, if you get a text, that's one thing, right? But what about if you get a message on Facebook Messenger? Or what if you get a notification that someone liked one of your stories? Or you have some new followers on your Instagram account or something?
I have those all muted.
Do you? Good for you.
It really does get to
good
you.
Good
because it's just, it's one after
it's
the
like
other.
It's like a drug, huh?
It is.
Oh, look, someone added me. Ooh, someone followed me.
I know. I'm like, nope, I don't want to know. Yeah. I'll find out when I decide to open it.
And then if worst comes to worst, you can set time limits. Now, I have a thing that comes up every week on my phone. I don't know if everybody has this, but I think a lot of people do. That says your screen time is up a certain percent or your screen time is down a certain percent this week. And I always take a little sense of pride if it says my screen time was down 8% this week or whatever. I feel like, I'm doing better. That's
okay, how many hours was your screen time per day?
I don't know. Oh, okay. I don't know that number. I just know it was down this
That's
past
good.
Week.
That's good.
So, and I'll use my, like if I'm doing a ball game, I'm using my phone to check scores. And so I kind of feel like sometimes it's not really fair. Of course, my screen time was up because I did 2 ball games this week. Sure. So I was on my phone for 3 hours checking scores and stuff like that. But, if it's not something that's imperative, if you have to set some screen times. I know when I got my kids' phones, each when they were, about 16, I actually had my kids sign a contract. And I think probably it was the first contract they were ever really exposed to. But the contract basically said, your cell phone is for this and this and this, and these are the things you cannot use your phone for. And if you do use your phone for them, you will lose the privilege of having the phone that I am paying for. Mm-hmm. And I've had to enforce it once or twice.
Wow.
But you know what? The kids took it pretty seriously. When they lost the phone for 24 mm-hmm. hours or for 48 hours, they realized, oh, he ain't kidding around. No.
My daughter actually imposes a self-imposing on her
Good
Instagram.
For her. That's awesome.
And she has a password on it for a certain amount of time, and only her husband knows the password. So if she wants more time, she has to ask him for it. She can't just put her own password in for it.
Ooh, wow.
She's tough. I'm not that tough. I'm like, nope.
On. In a way, it's like she has to ask her husband permission. Well, that kind of sounds kind of...
Well, she imposed
she's
it
the
herself.
One that imposed it. Yeah. So that's what makes it actually a pretty good idea. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's check weather more with the Andy Griffin Show after this.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
I hit the wrong button. That's my bad. Sorry about that. Welcome back. 937 on KDXU. Mello's laughing at me. Not they should really. Make you push these buttons, and then I wouldn't have to worry about what button.
No, it's more fun when you mess it up. Yeah. It's okay. You're human. It's all good.
Well, all morning long, I've been hitting the sports button to play music for my sportscast.
And, right. So that makes sense.
And they're both on the corner. One's on the left corner, one's on the right corner, and I just hit the wrong corner.
It's okay.
So it's all good. Yeah. Tomorrow is the Republican convention in Salt Lake City at the Salt Palace, where delegates will be recommending replacements for people like, say, Mitt Romney. Also, Congressional District 2 with Celeste Malloy and Colby Jenkins, and the gubernatorial race, Spencer Cox, Phil Lyman, and company. Now, it's an interesting thing. So, a few years ago, and Jimmy Kesson knows more about all the details on this one, but basically they made it so that you could gather signatures so that if you didn't get the delegates vote, you could still be on the primary ballot. And some candidates were like, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to count on the delegate. And actually, for instance, Celeste Malloy in this convention, she has put her faith in the delegates that they will select her as a candidate. If Colby Jenkins ends up getting the delegate vote, Celeste Malloy is out. She cannot run because she didn't gather signatures. Now, Jenkins did gather signatures, and you can kind of read two things out of this. You can read, number one, Celeste is confident that she is going to get it, and Colby is not, and that's why he gathers signatures. That's one way to look at it. The other one is Colby is just, you know, maybe making double sure that that he's in. So, yeah, it'll be Celeste Malloy and Colby Jenkins basically for the Republican nomination. I think Celeste will get you have to have 40% of the vote. I think she'll get 40% of the delegate votes, and she will be on the ballot, and we'll have a primary between her and Colby down the road. That's kind of what it's looking like. As far as the gubernatorial race, Spencer Cox will very likely get the delegate vote. That will leave others like Phil Lyman, Carson Jorgensen, Scott Robbins, Sylvia Miera-Fisk to try to gather signatures. I have already said, and if I haven't said it, let me say it for the first time. Maybe I have before. I don't know, but I'm kind of hopeful Phil Lyman actually gives Cox a run for his money. I think Phil Lyman is more conservative. The thing about it, so Spencer Cox has done some good things. Banned abortion in the state. He has limited diversity, equity, and inclusion. He has made some tax cuts. The whole females in sports in the state of Utah, he kind of sort of said, yeah, I'm against that, but we can't ban it because there will be lawsuits. And it seems like to me Spencer Cox has been a little too quick to compromise on a lot of things. And Phil Lyman won't do that. So we'll see what happens. I'm not completely endorsing Lyman because I don't know that he has a chance to defeat a governor who is relatively popular in Spencer Cox. But I'm hopeful that at least it'll be close. So second district, I already mentioned Celeste Malloy and Colby Jenkins. There is a third candidate, Ty Jensen. I don't know if he has the signatures or not to actually make it to the primary. We'll see about that one. And then let's see, you also have Attorney General. Seemed like there was one other one. Anyway, the bottom line is that I have really mixed feelings about this whole delegate versus signature gathering thing. Because it used to be, you know, wasn't that long ago, like, a dozen years ago, there was no signature gathering process. You were elected by the delegates, and that was your representative from the Republican Party. And then they would go face a Democrat, and in Utah, most of the time, they would win. But with this whole signature gathering thing, it's made things a little bit different, a little bit crazy. I'm curious, Mella, how you feel about this. So if the people that we elected, the local delegates, all went to this convention and said, we want Celeste Malloy to represent the Republican Party, and then through signature gathering, and it's not a small number, 28,000 people have to sign on the signatures. If that person then shows up and is on the ballot in the primary, what does that do to you mentally? Does that make you go, I don't know? I mean, how do you feel about this?
So I guess my question, because I'm really don't know much about all these election rules.
Mm-hmm.
Are the signatures gathered from the area that the delegate is representing?
Yes. And they have to be registered Republicans. You can't. I actually have had a couple of people knock on my door and say, will you sign, you know, your name on the X to put this person on the ballot? And most of the time I tell them, no, I'm not signing any signatures because I don't like that personally.
I think if they're, I don't know, maybe not popular, but I think if they're in the same delegates area and there's enough people that are also wanting that person, then I don't think it's bad.
If you remember Janine Burton, Santa Clara, your city.
Yeah.
She was actually out of state, and when she came back, she couldn't get it filed in time. She actually had to do the signature gathering thing, or a write-in, basically.
Yeah, she was. But
Santa Clara City Council, and she won. She got in.
I was told like a little bit information about that they kind of like wouldn't let her get in, and she could have, but they like kind of pushed her out.
Yeah, and she was on the show, and she talked about that, and she basically said, she tried to register to run before she left. She had a 7-day trip planned. They wouldn't let her register before the trip, and she was going to get back 1 hour before the deadline.
Yeah.
But her flight got delayed, and she was not able to get back in time. And so, I know there were people that, well, why didn't you sign up correctly? And so, well, you know, all this came about. Kind of extenuating circumstances. So, does that excuse her not being signed up in time? I don't know. Some people say no. Others say, well, yeah, that's a really, really good reason, really good excuse.
Yeah.
Obviously, enough of them thought that was a pretty good reason because they elected her to the Santa Clara City Council.
I don't know. I don't like it when people like that are in the system are trying to keep everybody out so they can stay in the system.
Yeah.
So I like the shuffling of the people in and out.
The convention tomorrow, the Salt Palace, we'll have a full report on Monday morning of what came of the convention and who's still left in the race. And it's going to be fascinating. It's going to be very interesting. There have been a little bit of mudslinging through some of these races. You know, Trent Staggs is one of those that got... That was the other race. I was Mitt Romney's spot. Mm-hmm. There's some people that are trying to fill Mitt Romney's spot, which in my mind you could put a trained monkey in there and do better than Mitt Romney, but I'm not going to say that.
No.
That's what I was going to say, but I'm not going to.
No,
because that would be terrible.
That would be terrible, but I'm glad anybody else is going to be there.
She said it, and I happen to agree.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I saw the statistic, and we're going to get to dive in a little deeper on it when we come back from commercial break. But, Mello, I saw the statistic that kind of blew me away a little bit. Did you know that young people between the age of 20 and 29, are almost twice as likely to be scammed as a person over the age of 60? Wait, what?
I don't know about that.
No, they have the numbers to prove it. And we'll talk about some of the reasons why and how to avoid getting scammed after this.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back. It's 9:50. If you want to call, we do have open lines. You guys can call anytime you want. 673-5890. We have one. So remember that book by Clay Travis, American Playbook? We gave those away on this show for about 2 weeks. There is one book out here that has not been claimed.
I didn't see that.
And so, I'm going to give, and I wish I could remember the name that was on it.
I can run out there and check.
We're going to give this person, so it's been a couple of weeks. Generally speaking, the rule is 2 weeks to claim a prize, and then it goes back into the prize pool. So I'm going to give this person today, they've got till 5 o'clock today. Actually, they probably have, if they could get into the building over the weekend, they have the weekend. But on Monday, I'm going to give that book away to someone else. So just to keep that in mind, if you want a book but haven't picked it up yet, it's time to pick it. I want to thank the guests from this past week. Jack Lancaster was on Monday. Sage Ridge Police Department. Boy, we had a lively discussion on Tuesday about scooters and helmets and stop signs and you know, coming on the heels of that horrible crash last weekend in which a couple of teenagers were going really fast. A car turned in front of them. They hit the car. The car didn't hit them. They hit the car, but they were both injured badly enough to be life-flighted to Salt Lake.
Oh, I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, just a really scary accident. And, you know, it's got a lot of us, the drivers here in southern Utah, concerned because a lot of those scooters go really, really fast, especially the electric ones and e-bikes as well. And generally speaking, most of the people using those don't wear helmets.
Yeah, no, we have one. It goes up to like 20 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And it's scary. If you go out to Little Valley, they're all over the place. Like, you have to drive so carefully there.
I've actually had people say, who are looking for a house, say, I don't want to live here because there are too many of those and I'm afraid you know, something bad's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Some of those e-bikes go up over 50 miles
really?
An hour. Yeah.
Wow.
So those electric bikes. So. Anyway, thanks to Kia Chief Kyle Whitehead and Officer Tiffany Mitchell for being here. We had Zach Renstrom on Wednesday talking. He talked about government overreach a lot. That was pretty good. And then yesterday, Brandon Humphreys from Enterprise City. We learned a little bit about Enterprise. We also learned that Brandon is a staunch conservative who is very anti-woke culture.
Okay.
He's still mad they changed Dixie State to Utah Tech.
Yeah, so that is frustrating.
It's good to talk to him. And he actually said they have a new art display in Enterprise called Dixie Express. It's a train. And they said the committee was wondering if they were going to change the name in Enterprise of the display because someone might be offended by the name Dixie. And he said, absolutely not. The Dixie Express is the Dixie Express. So that was good. That was refreshing.
That's awesome.
For sure. There was a couple of other things. Oh, this now, Mello doesn't believe it, but listen to this, Mello.
Okay.
More young people, and I'm taking a lot of this information from a story written by Zoshiti Rivera. That's the name of the reporter. She is kind of a trending news specialist over at Deseret News. But she says, more young people than ever, especially Generation Z, that's the youngest, right? They are becoming victims to online scams. According to a recent survey by Deloitte, found that Gen Z Americans were three times more likely to fall for a scam than baby boomers and twice as likely to have their social media accounts hacked than baby boomers. That's according to the FTC, in 2023, social media scams were one of the most prominent ways young Americans lost money, with 38% of them being 38% of all scams were from people ages 20 to 29 years old. You say, okay, why are young people falling for scams more? Well, first of all, if it's sheer numbers, Gen Z uses technology much more than, people my age or older. So the numbers there, obviously, you got more numbers, you got more people being scammed. Number two, growing up with the internet and technology gives them a sense of familiarity and could influence their decision to choose convenience over safety. The old lazy factor, right? Didn't you have a word for that?
Yeah, it's efficient living.
Efficient living, that's it. Mm-hmm. And number three, cybersecurity education to kids doesn't properly explain online safety in a way that makes sense to their online experiences. We had a really interesting, when Town Square Media, which is a national corporate, huge, I mean, they have thousands of employees nationwide. When they bought us, we were a relatively small corporation called Cherry Creek Media before that. We had a lot of learning to do as far as cybersecurity. We had to take classes. We had to learn to recognize, you know, phishing emails and phishing scams. And, you know, there's certain things they're like, yeah, you might have clicked on this, and don't click on it now.
Right. Well, they trick you. They send you something and make you think that it's somebody else, and then you click on it, and then you get reported. Oh, did you know you just were phishing, and you can't do that? I'm like, oh, thanks.
And one time, I was so good. They would send something almost every day. The tech guys with the corporation. One day they got me. There was something, and I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting, and I clicked on it. And guess what? I had to attend a class the next day.
I'm just not going to open any emails anymore.
That's kind of how I am. I'm like, all right, that's it. I'm never opening anything again. I don't care if they the boss, the guy that owns the company, the corporate guy, it sends me, I don't care. I'm not answering.
They can just send me like 300 in a row and I'll say, oh, now you want me to open it. Okay, I'll open it now.
Give me a call. That's what I say. Give me a phone call. All right, some real quick tips to avoid online scams. And again, 38% of, you think about that, Gen Z is probably 10% of the population, but 38% of the crimes. So, yes, just to the young people, too. Maybe if you're not falling for scams, maybe you can pass this on to your children or grandchildren. Number one, use multiple security options. It's a pain in the butt to have a second level of authority. Basically, what that means is, yeah, a password is great, but a lot of sites, the good ones, will say you'll also need, they'll send you something to your personal phone.
I do that. Yeah.
That's good because that's like a second level to make sure that it's really you. Because a scammer might get your email, might even get your password, but they're not going to get the phone that you are holding right here.
I like to keep all my passwords the same, so it's the only way I feel safe.
That's a bad thing. Don't listen to Mello. Don't be so quick to accept a job offer that will make you pay them at the beginning. That's a common scam. In fact, if anybody's asking for money up front, this should be a red flag right out of the gate. Okay, 2 minutes left. Be cautious about guaranteed crypto returns. I'm still not buying on the whole Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency and stuff. I can't do it. My son was into it. I'm not. Watch out for unexpected messages on social media that want you to become their, quote, brand ambassador.
No, they want you to buy something.
Yes,
yeah.
They do. And finally, this is for Mello. Create passwords that don't use common phrases or words. Never share the codes to your two-step authentication app. And change your password on a regular basis. Don't use the same one for everything. That's a no-no, Ketchikan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a no-no. So we're just trying to keep you. Do you really use the same password for everything?
I have a variation of a dollar sign and an exclamation point and a capital letter. Yeah, but it's the same. And I always get these notifications. This has been seen on the dark web. You should change your password. I'm like, that's why I have two-factor authentication.
Good for you. Yeah, I mean, it's sad. It's a pain in the butt. When we get an email... or not an email, we get an update from the bosses, and my boss will actually come in the room and say, okay, it's time to change the password. It's a pain in the neck. I have changed, just since Town Square bought us a year and a half ago, maybe almost 2 years, I have changed my password so many times that I don't even know what it is anymore. I rely on the computer to remember it and stuff. And it's a pain in the neck. But you know what? I've seen what can happen to someone who's whole identity has been stolen, and it's not a good thing.
No. I do have a password keeper, though, on my phone, so I should change my password more often.
My wife doesn't use a password keeper because she doesn't trust those either, but she keeps all the passwords in a file on her phone for everything that she's ever signed up password for, which is pretty impressive. In fact, when I can't remember one of mine, she's always like, you need to do what I do.
My dad has a literal Rolodex.
Does he?
Yeah.
Oh, those were the days. Those were the days. All right, we've run out of time. Mello, thanks for your help today. Always great to talk
to
you.
Good to see you.
We are going to sign off for a little while, but I'll be back on Monday morning. You can catch me doing news from 6:30 on, and then from 9 to 10, we'll talk live on the show. Thanks for listening. I'm Andy Griffin. We'll talk to you on Monday.